Well, Ken, it is great to be with you out here on the West Coast for our East Coast and around the world listeners. Tell us a little bit about your church and where in the Los Angeles area that you guys are at.
Cool. We are in the San Gabriel Valley. That means we're east of the city proper of Los Angeles. We're in a place called Rosemead. It's a sprawling, typical Los Angeles valley that's just got, you know, continuous places. Our church is 86 years old. This year, it was started in 1925 as a mission to Japanese-speaking immigrants in East L.A. Today, we are probably a dozen Pacific Rim people, white, black, Hispanic, really trying to bring the neighborhood in, which is introducing a different kind of diversity, which is socioeconomic and class, which is, I mean, we need that, but it's a challenge.
Yeah, you write a lot and speak a lot about reaching Americanized Asian Americans. I want you to unpack what that actually means in your context.
Americanized Asian Americans are an emerging people group. I think it's like any other immigrant, children of immigrant group in the United States. But I think many of the first generation Asian churches in America are pretty blind to this group. They just think, okay, so I know you either speak broken Chinese or Korean and you speak more English, but I want you to think Asian and I want you to marry Asian. And basically, the Asian church is seen as kind of this cultural, I call it a cultural pond of purity. So we're going to have multiple generations of our kind going to church, and we're just going to be a dam against acculturation. And the dam's been leaking, right, for decades. And so initially in the 80s, we recognized that, and it was happening to some of us ourselves. And so we said, hey, you know, we need a church. I need to go to a church where it's not bilingual or trilingual and where the senior pastor and the board don't think so first generation. And so the Americanized piece, it's certainly got a lot of different forms, but basically they don't identify with first culture, if not bicultural, but sometimes almost more Americanized by culture, if not by face.
Hmm. And so what are some of the real challenges and problems that are coming from that? As you look to the future, if you don't make certain changes, what do you see happening?
Well, one of the things that I've been doing my thinking and talking about is, as you know, I looked at Kinnaman and Lyons' book, Unchristian, and I don't know that they did any ethnic studies on that. But from just the anecdotal talking to different people, I think the similar problem, it exists in the first generation church. And I think it has very specific form. Simply that I think even first generation young people, not even second generation, they see being a Christian as being a neo-Pharisee. And what that means is it's all about appearance. It's all about strict piety, morality, making comparisons and coming out looking better or worse. And they're saying, well, if I am reading the Bible correctly, that's not what we're called to be. And so I feel like many of the first generation Asian churches have this huge blind spot that maybe because of Confucian background in our culture, there is something very appealing about entitlement and hubris and all of that. But this current generation of young people, even to the first generation, is basically saying, no, you can keep all that. And so although these first generation leaders will come to seminars to learn how to not lose your young people, what they don't want to face is what is fundamentally flawed in how you understand the gospel and how you come together as a people. What does it really, you know, come down to when a couple in your church goes through divorce and nobody comes to church anymore, or someone's struggling with who they're attracted to, right? So on and so forth. It's like, no, this, you know, we chafe against the model minority stereotype, but we've created our own subculture of model minority.
Mm. Speaking of minorities, obviously in America right now, Ken, Latino population is exploding in, I think, 4 states now. They are the majority population. Speaking to the Asian community and Asian Americans, what do you see in that growth and what's happening? Is it mostly West Coast? Do you see that eventually spreading across the country? What do you see in trends and if you look ahead a decade?
In terms of
just growth,
Latino?
Just growth of the Asian population.
Oh, the Asian population.
Yeah.
I think certainly the percentage of Asian Americans is increasing. For Japanese Americans in the state of California, the last census, they were the only Asian Pacific group that actually went backwards. So in many ways, and that's why I think it's not coincidental that our church is historically Japanese, that we're going through these changes. The Japanese Americans have had to face acculturation issues way earlier in their own families and dating patterns and all of that kind of stuff. And their immigration patterns have been much more cut off. I mean, you have people coming from Japan today. They work for big Japanese companies. They only want to stay here for 4 years, and then they head back. Koreans, Vietnamese, you know, refugees, they're coming here. They're putting down roots, and they're staying. So I think what that's doing is it's actually accelerating the rate of acculturation. What we're seeing is among the Southeast Asian groups, the Cambodian, the Vietnamese, the Burmese, their first-generation young people are into hip-hop. They're actually marrying people from the hood, and they're staying in the hood, right? That's very different than what we've seen with East Asians. And so even to just kind of throw everybody together is not a natural thing.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. For pastors that are listening, and they may not be in areas where there's high populations, but let's talk about the just cultural differences and how you lead them. Because if you are attracting multi-races to your churches, specifically in the Asian community, what are barriers and things like that that just are natural to that culture or to the culture in the way that we may not be connecting with them if we are a black pastor or a Latino pastor or a white pastor?
Well, and this doesn't apply just to Asians.
Right.
It's about power. And to actually perceive your own power as a majority group of anything. And, you know, Asians do that, too, whenever they're in the majority. So there's this huge blind spot that we can never see unless someone who doesn't have the blind spot loves us enough, has enough commitment to what we're trying to become, that will actually tell us.
Right. That's a great point.
Right?
Absolutely.
I have a pastor on my staff who's Mexican-American. His uncle helped start the Hells Angels in Oakland. Okay. He didn't go to Yale or Harvard. He went to prison. And he loves the Lord as much as anybody else in our church. So he left our church 4 times in 10 years because although he liked my teaching, no one reached out to him. Right? He was a nightclub bouncer at night. He had kind of a life that nobody else could match. But then God began to change us and began to make us realize that there are Mexican kids in the neighborhood that were now starting to come to our youth group, and we had no clue how to really advise them and guide them. And so this guy, his daughter at the time was a junior higher, and she was cute. And so the kids in the neighborhood are all hitting on his daughter. So he shows up and he goes, "Pastor, I think it's great that the Mexican kids now are coming to the church, but you guys don't know what you're doing. You can't be their best friend. There's nobody home waiting for them. They need structure. They're going to start necking in the hallway. They're going to start taking drugs in the bushes, and then you're going to kick them off the campus like every church has done before. So I volunteer, since they're hitting on my daughter, I volunteer to be a youth advisor." And just by being himself and understanding the culture that they came from, he schooled us, right? And then he became a deacon of racial reconciliation, and then I put him on my staff. He's my community development pastor. So I feel like by bringing him into the mix, by sharing power with him, he began to help us understand how to do this better. So I would think you can only read so many books, right? And he clearly had made a commitment. He left 4 times and came back in 10 years. Mm. So he had made a commitment. He was already inspired, motivated by his own pursuit of the kingdom and reconciliation. So he put up with a lot of crap, right? Yeah. But it's just like, okay, but now that you're at the table, right, and you have a title, that hopefully starts to even the playing field. Mm. So I would say that's really important that you actually have friends who are not like you. That's and right. Who don't have the same power.
Yeah. I want to stay in this direction. My wife and I have adopted 2 boys, both biracial, half black, half white. And for us, it's just a whole new world. And for us, we feel like we see in their schools and in their community and in our neighborhood a lot of brown children, whether that's
sure.
the Asian, Hispanic, mixed race, of any mixes. And you mentioned this in the Asian community. I want you to share with our audience, for people who may not be comfortable admitting this, but the reality is we're seeing lots of interracial relationships and marriages, and that's going to continue. view, to where I think we'll literally have a brown world, which to me and my wife, we're biased.
Sure.
We have a biological daughter as well, who's as lily white as I am. But brown is beautiful to us. So for those who aren't there, talk about why is humans, because it's not Asian, Latino,
right.
black issue.
Right.
Why do we have such a problem, or should I say, why do some people have such a problem with mixed races? Where do you think that comes from?
Well, several years ago, I came across a book by the science writer for Newsweek magazine, and he's not writing as a Christian or anything. He has no horse in the race, right? But he just said, what's interesting is the latest paleoanthropology shows that when looking at fossilized DNA of humans, that there's only been one race of humans, and we're all from Africa. And everything else that we tend to use to differentiate, oh, you're white, you're black, you're Indian, whatever, it's like it's literally only skin deep. And that there is actually more genetic differentiation amongst what we would call racial groups. So amongst people from Norway, there's more genetic variation amongst Norwegians than between Norwegians and Chinese. Okay? So I began to preach about that, and I said, okay, so this is one place where the Bible has kind of come back to what, I mean, the science has come back to what the Bible's always been saying. It's just that many of us who believe the Bible don't say what the Bible says.
Right.
And so we just keep thinking that there's all these different races. I said, our language has to change. That's number one. If the Bible has always taught there's only one human race, and now science is saying there's only one race of humans, we can all have babies together. Okay?
Exactly.
Right? Right?
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
So it's like this is not another race of people.
Right.
Then to say biracial, interracial marriage, multiracial person, all of that language
really should be thrown out.
It's totally inaccurate. Okay? And I, you know, I'm out there with the racial reconciliation people who are speaking on this, and they're my good friends. And I said, but the term racial reconciliation is erroneous, too.
That's a great statement.
Right.
How do they respond to that? Because you're their friends.
Oh, so yeah, they're my friend. And, they see the science. They can't disagree with it. But then they kind of look at me and they go, but Ken, the language is already out there. Right. And I said, but how many times, you know, in other issues was there fixed language?
And we changed
it. And we changed it because the language itself continues to perpetuate the problem.
Absolutely.
Right. I'd say ethnically white person whose parents were Taiwanese missionaries. Okay. So she was coming to our church. She married a Taiwanese guy. She was more Taiwanese
sure.
than she was white. But then, you know, and I think third culture kids of missionaries who look white American but grew up completely in a different culture, when they come here to go to college, people don't know what to do with them because they're dealing with what they see physically.
Yep.
But when you go into their brain and what they value and what they like and what they don't like,
yep.
it's all about where they grew up.
It's absolutely right.
So I would say it's as fundamental as we need to take a giant step back and say there's one human race.
That's a great statement.
Okay, and that we're all, and that's the way God sees us.
Sure.
And yet, and this is the other piece that I think has been helpful, is to say that each culture group, though, especially those of us with a Western education and theology, we have captured God in our fragment of the broken mirror. Right. So if before the fall, you know, God saw a perfect reflection of himself. But with the fall, the mirror breaks into all these different pieces. No one piece of the broken mirror can contain the whole image of God. So the problem is historically, the West has been looking at this Western fragment for so long and said, well, that's all I need to know about God.
Mm-hmm.
And then those of us who come to Christ, we're convinced that there's nothing of God in my cultural piece. Then we're all kind of left with this incomplete picture of God.
Mm.
So I think the other piece of this is to say, not only is God not reflected in any one ethnic cultural group,
mm-hmm.
but that the flip side is to get a bigger picture of God, I need what you have that I don't have.
Mm.
And there's a different thing driving that, a sort of desperation to know God more fully. Then I'm doing this because it's the Christian thing to do.
Mm.
What we've seen before is like Pastor Steve. He left our church 4 times in 10 years. Every time he left in those 4 times, I'd say, doggone it, why does that always happen? Well, we tried, but I can see why he wants to go to the, you know, Victory Outreach, former gangbanger church, because
right.
that's more significant. And I wouldn't weep over that.
Right.
But when those Mexican kids started coming to our church, and I was completely ignorant in spite of going 2 times through seminary, and here comes a guy who's got a PhD in street, And I go, don't leave.
That's exactly right.
If you leave now, we can't do the ministry that we're called to do. Okay? And so if Steve were to leave now, not just me, but so many people in our church would be beside themselves because he's contributing something from his experience that we need to be the body of Christ.
Wow, that's a mouthful, and our time is running short. He is Ken Fong. That was great stuff. More to uncover there. Ken, on behalf of Catalyst, we appreciate your ministry. We appreciate these words. I know our audience is going to be better off for hearing them. Thank you so much for stopping by.
You're welcome.